Dave, you need to stay in your microphone.
I need to stay. Excuse me. I need to. Am I off? Am I too close to the microphone?
No, no.
You guys aren't close enough. Problem. All right.
Let's make this right.
Hey, this is episode 25 of Theater Geeks. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaub.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
This is episode 25 coming to you live from the Daily Grind in Elkhart, Indiana, which has been kind enough to give us some space here, and we are happy to have a small but enthusiastic live audience with us today. This is our second start, unfortunately, folks, because we lost power, and it was entirely my fault. But today's episode, one of the things we want to talk, we're going to be actually doing a couple of episodes here at The Grind, but we were talking, and we will talk again, about the... About our lists of kind of must-see, must-know, and possibly must-do musicals for community theater. And Marcia was the one with the biggest list, so we let her start first. You started with what?
I started with anything by Rodgers and Hammerstein. Mm. Not anything. This is the top five. Plus State Fair,
yeah.
Yeah, which was written for the movies and then became a play.
Right. Okay, and those plays are good because...
Because everybody knows them, because the music is lovely, because you can pretty much get away, at least in like Oklahoma and Carousel, with basic turn-of-the-century, early peasant-y kind of costumes. It's nothing big and fancy.
Right, yeah.
And the stories are very basic, and people, I think, identify with them, and plus they know the music. And I think that's very important when you're doing a musical.
Yeah.
That at least they know at least one, they can hum, "Oh, What a Beautiful Morning," or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Oklahoma. I mean, most people know the song Oklahoma.
Well, and people think of those shows as being, you know, especially when... If you're in community theater a lot, you might think of those shows as being maybe a little, you know, overdone or not necessarily, well, maybe overdone. But the fact is people do love them, but they are also truly great shows. I mean, they really are great shows. And I'm not a huge fan of The Sound of Music. Is that still playing? Oh. What was it doing? I'm just going to unplug it. That was good. That was a good clunk.
But don't tap the table.
Don't tap the table. Anyway, they are great musicals. I'm not a huge fan of The Sound of Music, but then, you know, I hadn't seen it for so long, and I watched the movie, and I said, you know, we really got to do this again because it really is, it's a terrific show.
Yeah.
And it has a lot to say. And even South Pacific, I mean, South Pacific gets into some controversial issues, not heavily, but they're there.
Well, a lot of, I mean, it talks a lot about racial issues,
right,
especially back in the 1940s. I mean, I guess we were saying it's kind of, these shows have become iconic. By the way, what are the top five? What are those five musicals?
Oh, you're going to do that again, right?
Well, they are Sound of Music.
South Pacific. King and I.
The King and I.
Carousel. And Oklahoma.
Okay. And State
Plus
Fair.
State Fair.
It's kind of like A-E-I-O-U and sometimes Y.
Sometimes Y. Yeah. There you go.
And sometimes why.
The next ones on your list were...
Oh, geez. I don't know. I keep adding to them. And John gets me because I'm taking all this for you, if you have dancers.
Crazy for you.
Jerry Herman stuff, Hello Dolly or MAME. Rick said Oliver, which, you know, has a lot of kids in it, which is always a big plus. West Side Story, if you have dancers. Annie, Chicago. I think that's about it. Fantastics. And for really small audience, small shows, but they need big, good performers. I do. Romance. They're two-person shows, but they really are, the audiences love them, especially I do.
Yeah.
Fantastics is not a big
cast. Fantastics is good.
Fantastics is a great musical. And I think one of the fun things about Annie or Oliver is that it really starts to incorporate large groups of people. And, of course, the more people, the merrier. You know, especially if you've got enough space on your stage to be able to accommodate more people.
And you can use kids in that. You can use kids of all ages in the chorus, which is really kind of nice. I'm also adding Anything Goes to my list. And The Music Man.
And The Music Man, right.
Okay. Anybody else have a different one?
Let me pull up the MTI website.
Yeah, really.
I like a funny thing happened on the way to the forum. So
that's right.
Great show. Easily, you know, it's easily accessible. Body humor. Everybody understands it. They get it. It's fun. So... we have somebody in the crowd is trying to say something, but we can't read it.
What is that? What's her?
Rick. Rick's sitting at the table. We don't even know what he.
Oh, that's true. We started over.
We started over because we screwed up.
Yeah. And Rick Ellis, who is our friend from South Bend, has come all the way, has traveled the many miles by horseback through snow and everything else. And he is with us again today. Rick was with us for a few episodes back and has come back to be part of the Geek Squad here.
Talk about one of his favorite things in the world.
Musical.
Coffee. No, yeah. Never. No.
Coffee. By the way, coffee at the Grind is great.
Hey, that's true. By the way, this is the best coffee on the planet. I want everyone on the planet, since we're on the internet right now, to know that it's the best coffee, best food on the planet is right here at the Daily Grind in Elk Grove.
And what was the live chat? Where can people...
Oh, that's true. We can, yes, if they're hearing us live now, then they already know about it. If they're not hearing us live, by the time this hits the podcast, it won't matter anymore. So, but the fact is, yes, we are live on the internet. If you happen to catch us on Ustream, if you go to www.theatergeeks.com/live, there's a chat room there, and you can ask us some questions or heckle us or whatever. Our trusty slave, known as my daughter Paige, is following the chat room, and we'll pass along any commentary.
Yeah, why don't you all heckle us? I don't get enough of that from the people here at the table.
That's right.
What? What?
Okay, John, let's hear. What are your favorite musicals?
Well,
we haven't mentioned.
Well, a lot of my favorite musicals, we're talking about musicals that community theaters would do.
All right.
But if we're talking about my favorite musicals, that's going to change.
Well, what community theater type musicals?
A couple more. I mean, again, Beauty and the Beast, a beautiful show to do. Difficult to do. Any show that's technically difficult, which can also be a budget buster, those are difficult to do. But again, they bring lots of crowds in. Peter Pan, Beauty and the Beast. If you're looking for a musical that's going to bring a crowd, do one of those shows. You know, and just be prepared to find underwriters who can underwrite the flying system, because you need to hire somebody to do the flying.
And that's
insurance.
Many thousand dollars.
Well,
in insurance.
A lot of insurance. Yeah. Right.
There's a lot of insurance. Yeah. It's like, has anybody here ever been involved? Did you guys ever do Peter Pan over at your theater?
No, because of the insurance. We
did it at another theater.
And the insurance
locally.
Alone was like $10,000.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
The insurance premium was $10,000, or
something like that. We had to put $10,000 down, and then we had to. There were stipulations that we had to bring in a certain. There's only certain people in the U.S. that have to come in and train you. I mean, there's only so many companies that can do it for you. Okay, so yeah, it was. It's very cost prohibitive. Yeah.
And it takes a while to get used to flying.
Yeah.
Right, I've had that problem.
You've flown.
Yes, I did. That's why I'm saying that.
You flew? Now you have to tell us when.
They did it at another theater that I won't name, but that's close by to the south of us.
And slightly to the west.
Slightly to the west. And they were doing Peter Pan. So I went down. This is when I was working for the newspaper. I went down and to do a story.
Oh.
And the director said, I said, can I fly? And he said, well, yeah, talk to the guy over there. And I went to get hooked up in this harness, and the first thing that man said to me was, okay, lady, how much do you weigh?
Yeah.
That almost kept my feet right on the ground.
That's right. Yeah.
Did he fly? No, I did. I told him I didn't lie. Yeah. And it's very uncomfortable initially, extremely uncomfortable. Yeah.
They are uncomfortable, although they've done, ZFX out of Louisville, Kentucky, has been doing a lot of work on recreating the harnesses. In fact, they have a workshop coming up that I got an email on, and I thought, oh, I'd love to go just do that workshop, because they're going to fly and teach and just do all kinds of discussion on flight and different ways that they can use
their equipment. Think also that it would depend on your theater. I would say that for South Bend, with that big auditorium that you have now, it's probably a lot more involved and a lot more dangerous than it would be to fly at the Opera House, which is about 3 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you're going to fall there, you don't have that much that far to fall.
There's a musical that I saw a long time ago in London called The Witches of Eastwick, based on the movie. And I thought, how would we do this at the Opera House? I'm off topic now, of course, but
yes.
That's typical. And I thought, well, because we can't fly the witches at the end of Act One, so how would we do it? And I thought, well, we don't need to raise them up that much at the Opera House. We'll just use piston chairs. You know those chairs that have the hydraulic pistons in them? And we'll just figure out how to make them look like they're going up in the air. You know, hey, look, if it's black underneath and the whole back of wall is black and they're standing and it looks like they're going up, I think we got it down.
There we go. I flew once.
Oh, come on, David. Don't do this.
Yeah, why is that so funny?
Because you're going to say you flew United or
no,
something?
No. They flew me at
did he really?
At Concord once for a thing. They just hung me from the batten, and it was the same thing. How much do you weigh? What was really weird is I had to get off of the harness after I landed, and then I discovered that once you start to sort of get off the batten, then the weight's heavier on the counterweights than you're putting in on the other end, mm-hmm. because the floor is now underneath you, and then the bar goes back up again, and so it's like really so you're like bouncing trying to get unhooked, and so I had to have a great deal of assistance, and I was unfortunately I was portraying Superman, which is made me look extremely stupid at that point. This was a long time ago.
I won't even ask.
Yeah, you don't. It was not the Superman you know. Let's put it that way, Marshall.
Yes, not.
Okay. Well, yeah. Did anybody say anything about Fiddler? By the way,
no. But
Fiddler on the Roof.
Fiddler on the Roof.
I wonder why we all blocked it out.
I was holding on to Man of La Mancha.
Oh, nice show.
Yes.
Nice show.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, we got a question out here, it looks like.
Is there a question on the floor?
Somebody was pointing. A question from the chat room?
The question from the chat room is, how do you walk the line between sort of comfort food for your audience and shows that will stretch their musical talent?
The eternal question.
How do we
walk the line between what you would call comfort food for the audience as opposed to something that we'd like to do and do something new, in other words? Yeah. That is the eternal question, isn't it?
All three of us that do this podcast on a regular basis, the three of us also sit on a committee called the Production Committee for our theater, and we do walk that line constantly, and we try to often find a slot on the season that we think we might be able to do a more unusual show. So we try to add that comfort food throughout the year, and then find that one slot where we can have, like, spicy Mexican.
Right.
But we're talking about food. Well, we're talking about food analogy.
That
I'm sorry.
Spicy right.
The Thai.
The right. Thai. There you go.
But so, you know, and especially with musicals, because we do find that our unknown musicals just don't necessarily sell as well. We did a beautiful production, at least in my opinion, a couple of years ago of Once on This Island. An Aaronson Flaherty musical, which is possibly one of my favorite musicals, although we're not talking about my favorite musicals, but it is one of my favorite musicals. And we put it on the season thinking that maybe it was right for the area for many different reasons, and found out that people didn't come to see it. And it really tanked at the box office. And we can't necessarily take those risks very often. But we do try to do that. We did another show a few years ago called Ruthless, which, again, is another one of my favorite musicals. Crazy, zany, little murder mystery musical about a 10-year-old girl who kills one of her classmates.
To get the lead in a school play.
And it's a very funny show. But, again, it just did not sell very well because it doesn't have a title like Oklahoma or Fiddler on the Roof. And so we take that risk. And so usually on a season, if we're going to try a risk on an unknown show, we'll place a couple of better-known shows on the season, like a better-known musical on the season that can kind of sustain that particular musical.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's a matter of, you know, it's like the comfort food for the audience, but then there's also sort of like to extend the analogy, red meat for our actors.
Yeah.
There we go. That's true.
Well, it's also kind of what comes first, the chicken or the egg, you know. You have to get the audiences in there to see this show on which you're taking a risk. But you can't get them in there unless they're sure that whatever they're seeing is going to be really good. And even then, it's a struggle. So I don't know what you do first, the comfort food, the big musical, the Rodgers and Hammerstein, and then the little one like Once on This Island. I don't know the answer. This is something that I think every community theater struggles with. Unless you have someone that's going to underwrite and give you the money to produce anything you do,
yep,
so that you won't lose money. You know, and after all, money's the bottom line. Sandy has a question.
Uh-oh.
Question, just a comment. And also, you have to keep attempting to stretch your audience. You have to try to stretch.
Right.
You continue to, what Sandy is saying, if you can't hear it in the microphones, is that you continue to stretch your audience. It's important to do that. And that's why we look at the season as a whole and try to figure out where we can take those moments to maybe stretch the audience and really challenge them a little bit. What? I mean, this year, we're doing only two musicals in our season this year. And one of them is a very big musical, in my opinion. It's called The Drowsy Chaperone. It's the funniest musical I've seen in years. I just hope people will come to see it because it's a very good musical with wonderful music, a great storyline, but nobody knows it.
It seems like it's gotten a lot. It won a Tony, correct?
It won a couple of Tonys. Yeah.
Yeah, but you have to realize whatever area of the country you're in, how big is a Tony to, you know.
North Central Indiana.
Yeah, well, really.
And there, it's often a different animal when you're talking about theater people that know it, but your patrons don't necessarily know it.
Right, that's true.
Yeah. That's true.
So it's a struggle. It really is.
Is that your list, John? Did you get?
Most of mine were on Marsha's.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Great minds think alike.
Marsha.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had several on my list. A couple of them are Hello Dolly and The Music Man. Mostly because they are. Well, there's two reasons for them. First of all, they're personal favorites of mine. Always have been. I think that actually the first musical I ever saw was a Chicago touring production of Fiddler on the Roof. And it was the first real, actual professional musical that I had ever seen, and it blew me away. But it's not necessarily one of my favorite shows. It's done a lot, and it certainly has a huge potential for large casts and a lot of involvement. But I kind of go back to Hello Dolly, which is just fun from one end to the other, as well as The Music Man, which is kind of the same thing. They're not necessarily deep stories. Of course, Hello Dolly comes from Thornton Wilder. I mean, the book couldn't have been better. But The Music Man, I always argue with people, because I think The Music Man, there's a little more depth to it than some people like to think there is. But again, it's one of those, it's a piece of Americana, and it's a piece of, as well as Hello Dolly, are both pieces of Americana that are just a great fun night of theater, and you walk away singing about at least three of the songs. So, and I think that's really good.
I agree.
And
agree.
Now
My
one
Fair
of
Lady hasn't been mentioned.
My Fair Lady.
Oh, sorry. I was just.
That's all right.
One of my other shows, and it's a more contemporary show, I think it borders on a little bit of risque, but not very much, and it can be pretty PG, is Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, that's great.
That is such a goofy show, and we've done it at our theater, and it's one of those shows that it does have some technical challenges, particularly with the man-eating plant, but it's not an insurmountable kind of thing, and it's a whole lot of fun to do, and it is... I don't know. It's got such an off-the-wall sense of humor about itself.
There are so many musicals like that. Little Shop of Horrors just happened to be one that really hit, I think, the right note with at least the American public. But, I mean, there's some great little musicals, and maybe someday we'll talk about those because there's some great little musicals out there.
That's right, yeah.
We should mention somebody in the chat room said...
Oh, okay, we got another one in the
applause.
Chat room.
No, I think we mentioned it before, but...
Oh, okay, yeah. If you have a question for us, if you're watching on Ustream, go to www.theatergeeks.com and you can .com/live. You can watch there as well as give us some questions on the chat room. So or heckle us or make some comments. Anybody that got questions in here?
Anybody here have a favorite musical?
Yeah, any
like what are the musicals you wish you would see in community theater?
And please don't say Cats.
Or Les Mis.
Zombie Prom. That would be a small musical that I love, and that it's not very well known.
But
Evil Dead, but that one I don't think would have appeal as much as Zombie Prom. But Evil Dead is a
I don't know. It's a cult following on that on the movie.
It's pretty cool. I went to see it not too long ago and got hit by a piece of spleen in the face. So that was pretty awesome. Marcia didn't like it.
Now we got to Rick just a little bit late on sort of thing. Did you come with a list of musicals or not?
I have a great mind too, like Marcia.
Hey! Oh, okay.
That's why we're here.
Other than La Mancha and My Fair Lady.
Oh, La Mancha?
I do like La Mancha.
I do like La Mancha.
Yeah, La Mancha is terrific. Yeah. La Mancha is terrific. And why? It's not a huge cast. Generally, or I guess it can be.
It's a great storyline, though, and maybe that's what carries all of these shows through and makes them what we're talking iconic. Is that there's the storylines are excellent, mm-hmm. You know, they're engrossing. The music is well written. It has a purpose inside the show. I mean, it's
inspiring.
Yeah, it's just
allows you to root for the underdog, and
right?
Win, yeah.
Yeah, and I think and most of them have a great love story usually that's involved.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just that's I think what makes them so special and why people continue to do them.
And just familiarity. I mean, you know, there's nothing like going to the theater and, like you said, walking out with songs you know in your head for days. Yeah.
Right. Unlike straight plays, which don't have music, you don't walk out humming all the songs in those.
Hopefully.
Usually. And that's my really clumsy segue to, okay, what's your list of five non-musicals?
How long is this episode going to last?
Yeah, this episode's going to go until we're done.
Oh,
we're
excellent.
Anyway. We got two episodes to do here.
Well, we should start with Rick, because Rick didn't get his musicals to be
that's right.
To talk about all of his musicals.
You know, and I actually didn't even write down musicals. I did compile a list, not of my favorite, but plays I split into comedy and drama, about five each, that I think community theater should do. Or four comedies and five dramas. I have The Odd Couple. As You Can't Take It With You.
You scratch that off your list, John. Yeah. I have to scratch it off of mine, too.
Private Lives.
Oh, that one.
Private Lives. Why Private Lives? Noel Coward's tough, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's still a community theater staple.
Private Lives over Blythe Spirit?
Yeah.
I'm just asking.
I just have a hard time with... I mean, unless Blythe Spirit has done really well...
There's
with
flying
the
again.
Ghost and
yeah.
The... You know, yeah. And Lend Me a Tenor is my last.
Oh, that's great.
Comedy.
Yes.
And drama, these are all classic American. I mean, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, The Glass Menagerie, Death of a Salesman, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and Long Day's Journey and Tonight.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100% on the dramas. However, my question to you is, especially today, when everything is kind of... at a very low ebb.
Yeah.
Do you think people are going to pay money to come see Death of a Salesman?
Well, and that's the thing. You don't want to put everything on the season at
Whoa.
Once, but I think you owe it to your audience.
I mean, I think they're marvelous.
To put at least one a year. And there's not, I don't think there's anything wrong with, but you're right. You're going to, I mean, with the society the way it is today and the economy, I don't think dramas are going to sell very well. People want to be entertained. They want to walk out singing and
right.
humming a
or
tune.
Or at least
or
with
laughing.
A happy ending,
yeah,
kind
absolutely.
Of.
Yeah, yeah, but I it doesn't mean that we can ignore good theater. I mean, I think it still should be done. And if people don't come, and you know, I'm always for the actor anyway. So
there you go.
Yeah, well, that's true. Cool. And I've seen recently, I've seen wonderful production of Virginia Woolf.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And on a very small stage,
yeah.
And it just... blew
I
me
saw
away.
The same
it
production.
Was
yeah.
marvelous.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's not a big audience for it. And today, with all the underwriting kind of slowly seeping into the sand,
yeah.
You have to depend on word of mouth from your audience and ticket sales.
Right.
And they're just not there for big dramas
well,
anymore.
Well, and what we were talking about in terms of musicals and how do you... I don't remember what was said. How do you...
Oh, the comfort food versus...
Yeah, the comfort food versus... I mean, I think you have to do the Rodgers and Hammerstein in order to continue to do what your audience isn't necessarily going to come and see. You're still going to get an audience. I mean, people that saw that same production of Virginia Woolf can't stop talking about it.
Right.
I saw it, other people I know saw it, and everybody thought it was wonderful. And those of you that missed it, shame on you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
It was absolutely amazing.
It really was, yeah.
But by the same token, then, I've seen other dramas that were like, well, I always go with my friend Sandy, and she keeps saying, can't we leave?
Yeah.
Can't we leave? And I'm going, no, we can't, because we're
That's
here
what
to stay.
She's saying that right now.
She is. Well, at least I know I'm not alone in that. You know?
But you can say that about musicals and
comedies.
Of
course you can.
You can say it
of
about everything that if it's not a good production.
Yeah, that's the thing. So,
yeah, right.
I think you have to be really careful if you're doing either an offbeat musical or a drama.
Yeah.
Even a good, good drama.
Be careful that
it
you do it
has
well.
To be yeah. well cast and well produced.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's got two strikes against
but
it.
But I would rather it be done.
I see.
I mean,
even
not a
done
whole, not
badly.
Not a bad production. No, you can't say that.
Would
about
you rather? Sometimes though, just give the audience the script and have them read it. If it's a bad cast.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a thought.
I mean.
And we're having a read-along.
And for bad musicals, we're having a sing-along in the green room.
But, I mean, I guess I just, I worry sometimes about season ticket holders.
Yeah.
Because when you only have so many slots in a season, and if you produce a drama that, for example,
Long Day's Journey
in Tonight. Okay, that's fine. Which is very
long night.
To me, it's a very long, and it's a very long day's journey. But it's what are you risking in the fact that you may lose season ticket holders at that time too? Because it's like, oh, man, if they're going to produce this stuff, I'm not going to buy a season ticket
anymore.
Well,
I don't think
I'll
you're
just pick and choose.
One show.
You
but
might.
Like
I mean,
Dave,
they might just
like
wanting to pick and choose.
It's an ancient dilemma. I mean, it really is.
Yes, I think the Romans and the Greeks had the same problem.
It
that's
is.
True.
Yeah.
But they didn't
you
have nearly
remember.
As many shows. To
they
pick.
Didn't have. They had a shorter season, so it wasn't as big a problem.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, and they wore those masks too. Is there a question out here?
There is a question. A lot of community theaters do children's theater. Sometimes it's theater for kids, and sometimes it's theater with kids as actors. And how does a community theater decide which style to present to their audiences?
Flip a coin.
I don't know.
No.
I think they're both
know.
Valid.
I think they're both valid.
Yeah.
And
we were going to talk about that.
We'll talk about that. You know what? I think maybe we can talk about that a little bit in our next episode, too.
Yes.
Because I want to get through our list real quick, and we'll wrap up number 25.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Your turn, John. Your turn, John. I'm
Arsenic's on there.
I'm staring at you.
Arsenic's on there. I don't think anybody would do it, but I absolutely love A Doll's House. I think it's one of those shows that is a classic at the right era, the right writer, and I think it needs to be seen more. I love Much Ado About Nothing, and if you're a community theater that wants to experiment with Shakespeare, I think
that's a good start. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and Our Town, I mean, it's another American classic, you know.
Our Town is...
and Madea. Madea.
Definitely.
Let's kill the children and burn the house.
Right. Yes, now, really.
Now, that would be theater for youth.
That's right. All right. Marcia is up.
What?
You're up with your list of plays.
Oh.
Do you have a list of plays?
Well, see, I did differently than him. I didn't do... But those are plays that community theaters usually
but
do
no, I
and
think
probably
you
should.
I think you
Let's
should.
Talk about
Arsenic
it.
And Old Lace.
Yes.
The Odd Couple.
Yeah.
Harvey. Steel Magnolias. Harvey, yeah. The Foreigner. Lend Me a Tenor.
Mostly comedies.
Well, that's what they want to see now.
Yeah, that's
but good
true.
Comedies, a lot of those good comedies like Steel Magnolias and The Foreigner,
they
may be comedies, but there's a lot of undertones in those that give the audience more than just comedy.
Right.
You mean, like, hit them with it and they don't know what's coming.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, actually teach them a lesson once or twice
in
there, right?
Yep.
I have to agree with you. My list is very similar to all of yours. My list includes, and I can't actually look at it because we'll have another technical glitch here if I do.
No.
But Arsenic and Old Lace, I've directed that show a couple times, and it is, to me, still one of the funniest plays ever written in America anyway, and it just blows me away because it's farce, which Marcia hates, except that it's black farce, and it's not exactly
not
like
pie
farce
in
farce.
The face.
It's not
farce.
Pie in the face
that's
farce. It's body in the in window seat farce.
Of course.
But it's
oh, you gave it away.
Much better.
It's corpse in the basement. Anyway, it's so it's one of those things that has this sort of, you know, humorous relationship with death and being crazy, and it's just it's all about just kind of being kind of nuts for a couple of hours. But it's very well written in terms of the way you have to stage it, and that's what I enjoy. I mean, like Forrest, it has like, you know, instead of the slamming doors and running around, you have people and things and bodies coming in through windows, going downstairs, out of window seats, in the kitchen, and all kinds of different, and up the stairs. And so you've got still that kind of misdirection that you get in regular farce. But it's really, for my money, a better written show than a lot of farces are. I also, for Neil Simon, I would say Odd Couple, of course, which is, you know, at this point is a classic. Mm-hmm. And I think Brighton Beach Memoirs.
I was going to say Brighton Beach.
Any of his biographical.
I think the Brighton Beach, Biloxi Blues, and Broadway Bound are all three terrific.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about Biloxi Blues. But so we take it the middle part of his life.
Let's check it out. So let's see. I'm trying to think of my list matches up pretty well with most of what. Of course, I've done a lot of mysteries, and I think
Agatha Christie sells.
Do anything
all
Agatha Christie?
The time.
Agatha Christie sells really well.
I had a conversation with Lee, in fact, on the way over here. How I don't necessarily do favorites, but genres I think are necessary.
Right.
And definitely a mystery like Agatha Christie.
And there are a number of really good just general thrillers that could still be done. Wait Until Dark is one that's it's a
Death
real
Trap.
Contemporary Death Trap. They're classics.
Or Gaslight.
And I think, you know, and Marsha, I think it was let's mention Death of a Salesman. Who mentioned Death of a Salesman?
Yeah, it was on my list.
Yeah, that to me is of course, that's, you know, the great American tragedy, really, and so it should be done. Maybe not right now, but it should be done. So anyway, that's our list of 5 and 5 musicals and plays.
five plus five plus twenty plus whatever the multiplication is.
That is the end of episode number 25 from the Daily Grind in Elkhart.
Yay.
And we hope that you've enjoyed it. Thanks to Rick Ellis for being here with us in this episode, and Rick's going to hang around, I'm sure. We are going to remind you to go and buy your geek gear at www.theatergeeks.com/store, and you can buy hats, mugs. I'm going to have to put the thong on, I
Thank
guess.
You.
Maybe I will. Oh, yes, we'll put the thong on. No. You can buy a Theater Geeks thong.
I'm not wearing
But hats, it. Mugs, T-shirts, sweatshirts.
Thong.
There's
I'm
a number of thong. Number of stuff, number of things there that you can have your special geek gear for listening.
That's good.
Thanks for being with us. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shope.
I'm Marsha Fulmer, and we obviously are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.